Next item, please.
Item 1136, adopt a goal of creating 2,000 additional supportive housing units by 2028.
So, colleagues, homelessness, as you all well know, is a humanitarian crisis which threatens the dignity and safety of very vulnerable people in our community. 72% of the people sleeping outside reported that they've experienced a mental illness, chronic physical condition, and/or a substance use disorder. Supportive housing marries affordable housing with support services, primarily serving people who are chronically homeless and with disabilities who cannot succeed in traditional affordable housing without support services. Supportive housing is one of the most effective tools for ending homelessness among people who are generally among the most vulnerable and most visible people experiencing homelessness in our community. In an analysis prepared for Home for Everyone, the Corporation for Supportive Housing calculated the need for over 2,000 new supportive housing units in Multnomah County. We're going to prepare a plan outlining the strategies and resource requirements for creating 2,000 units of supportive housing over a 10-year period. I want to thank in particular Commissioner Fish and Chair Kafoury, who's here with us today, for their leadership in bringing this resolution forward. I'd like to turn this over to Commissioner Fish.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And my comments will overlap a little bit with yours. But before I make my comments, may I invite the distinguished county chair, Deborah Kafoury, to come forward, Ian Slingerland, director of Homeless Initiatives for Home Forward, Mark Jolin, the director of the Joint Office of Homeless Services and a Home for Everyone, and Justin Martinez, who I understand is here to share a personal story. Thank you, sir. Mayor and colleagues, I'm very proud to co-sponsor this resolution today. It builds on a history of strong partnerships with the county, Home Forward, and community nonprofits. Today we have yet another opportunity to come together, to set a bold vision, and to get the job done. We've shown that when we link arms, we can make progress. Consider 11 by 13, where we preserved over 700 at-risk homes. Operation 305, where we worked to end veterans' homelessness. The Joint Office of Homeless Services, and the list goes on and on. Mayor, I'm proud to be part of this council, which has already this year taken important steps to address our housing crisis, working with the county to open new shelter beds, extending the housing state of emergency, enacting historic renter protections and then extending them, making new and significant investments in the Joint Office. I believe today's action is yet another step forward. We're having a big community conversation about homelessness and the increase in very vulnerable people on our streets. The most recent point in time count showed that while more people are moving from the streets to shelter, chronic homelessness is up. And about two-thirds of the people surveyed that are living on the streets reported a mental illness, or an addiction, or a physical barrier, or some combination. Chronically homeless men and women are the hardest to house, face the greatest barriers, and are at the highest risk of dying on our streets. And frankly, they are caught in a costly, inefficient, and failed system. So what do we do? And what have we learned? We've learned that for many people, a roof over their head is not enough. They also need intensive services that address their other life challenges, like mental illness and addiction. And that's where supportive housing comes in, deeply affordable and safe homes paired with intensive services. Today, Mayor, we acknowledge the successes that we've achieved together this past year, helping hundreds, if not thousands, of people move from the streets to homes. And we are poised to make a new and bold commitment to our most vulnerable residents. The Corporation for Supportive Housing has identified a need of about 2,800 new units of supportive housing. And special shout out to our guest, Heather Lyons. The resolution before us calls for 2,000 new units of supportive housing over the next decade. It's not enough. And no, it won't solve the housing crisis. But it will make a big difference in the lives of the people we serve. To craft and then advance this vision, we've assembled the A-Team. Multnomah County, the City of Portland, the City-County Joint Office of Homeless Services, Home Forward, the State of Oregon, the Corporation for Supportive Housing, and all of our nonprofit community partners. This resolution directs our partners to come together and develop a roadmap for accomplishing our goal. And that includes identifying existing and new resources to fund the services. Mayor and colleagues, I want to thank Chair Kefouri and Commissioner Myron for their leadership at the county. I also want to acknowledge Christian Gaston and Adam Renan for their tireless work. I want to thank the Mayor and Commissioner Udaly for their partnership and support, and in particular, Michelle Planbeck, Michael Cox, Kyle Chizik, Jamie Duhamel, and it's done. When they do it phonetically for me, I always screw it up, Jamie. I'm sorry. You're Jamie, not mine. Marshall Runkel and others. Okay, I just lost my train of thought. And there's many other people to thank who we'll get to later. So we have a terrific... Oh, I see. Okay, yes. So we have a terrific... Oh, boy. We have a terrific panel here today, and I want to begin by asking Commissioner Udaly if she has some remarks.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm proud to be a co-sponsor of this item alongside Commissioner Fish and Mayor Wheeler. As my colleagues so eloquently explained, we are setting an ambitious goal to meet a need that we have fallen far too short on for far too long. The only thing I have to add to this is that we know that this resolution is only a next step and not a solution to the entire problem or need for supportive housing. In 10 years, we may still be trying to catch up to a need that is sure to grow as our city grows. That is why we've included directions in this resolution to prepare a plan that can be scaled to further expand supportive housing to meet the total unmet need. I don't know if we have any unmet need. I maybe have an unmet need right now. Okay. I feel strongly that if we can do it, we should do it, and this plan will help us understand the full scope and resources available. So thank you to everyone who is here today. I look forward to your testimony.
Chair Kefouri.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. Since I became chair of Multnomah County, we've been working together, the city and the county, to build a more rational and robust response to homelessness. Step one was pulling everyone together through a home for everyone, setting big goals and aligning our resources around a simple strategy: prevention, housing, and shelter. Step two was making that partnership real with the joint office, bringing all of our resources under one roof, giving us the ability to respond to the forces that drive homelessness in real time. And we're here to talk today about what I see as the third step, a big commitment to supportive housing, which takes what we've learned in this year's point in time count and what we're learning in our efforts to reform our public safety system and what we've been learning during the healthcare reform and putting it all into practice. In February, when we went out and counted the people who were living on our streets, we found that our strategies were working. For the first time, there were more people in shelter than on the streets. But the folks who are on the streets are facing difficult challenges. Some are struggling with mental health issues and addictions. Some have serious medical conditions. And some people have been on and off the streets for years. We know that a jail bed or the waiting room of an emergency room are not the places to overcome these challenges. People need a home. But the reality is that affordable housing doesn't always come with these services. Supportive housing is affordable housing that has the intensive services that people need to stay healthy and stable and successfully housed. And throughout our healthcare system, our mental health care system, and throughout public safety system, we're paying for apartments just like these, but we need more. So we're saying today, let's challenge ourselves. Let's pull together all of our resources around a hard problem and align our efforts to help some of the most vulnerable people in our community. Tomorrow, the Multnomah County Board will bring this same resolution forward And I know that Commissioner Fish is planning on being there.
And I expect to be hazed.
So I'm excited to be here today with you all. Each one of you have played a key role in building a better safety net, and I look forward to continuing our partnership in the coming years. And today is just further proof of that committed partnership. Once again, we're saying that we can take on big problems, and together we can save lives. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, Commissioners, Ian Slingerland, Director of Homeless Initiatives with Home Forward. Thanks for the opportunity to be here in support of this important effort. We know supportive housing is a proven strategy, and we know it works in our community. As a community, we have significant expertise and capacity in delivering supportive housing. As we speak, there are thousands of units of supportive housing across our community. In some cases, this supportive housing looks like Home Forward's own Bud Clark Commons, a permanent supportive housing community that was designed and is staffed with appropriate property management and resident services to serve some of the most vulnerable people in our community coming out of homelessness with utilizing principles of harm reduction and housing first. We're fortunate today that we're joined by a colleague of mine who in a bit will share far more eloquently than I can what that means in real terms. In other cases, supportive housing looks more like a tenant-based housing voucher that's paired with supportive services, placement and retention support, attachment to clinical services that are mobile, so that participants can make use of existing affordable and market rate units in our community. And in other cases, supportive housing means recovery housing for people who are selecting a recovery-oriented environment in a community of peers. This model of supported housing matches peer case management with the supportive employment services and connection to outpatient addiction and primary health care. We know there's a range of needs in our community as it relates to supportive housing, and we need a range of responses to meet those needs. None of these models are without challenges, but we know we can meet those challenges. Our response as a community is not lacking in passion or expertise or a willingness to dig in and face the challenges we have and continue to improve. What we are lacking in is the necessary scale. We have a lot of experience to build on, and partners across the systems that touch people in homelessness agree that now is the time to lean into this effort. We need to expand, and we need to keep learning. And we need to focus on ensuring that as we build on our current efforts, we continue to make sure that what we're doing makes real our commitment to address the persistent racial disparities that exist in homelessness in our community. It'll take us all working together, Home Forward, government at all levels, the justice system, mental health resources, recovery programs, housing providers, social service agencies, and healthcare organizations. It's the humane and compassionate approach, and it's also the most cost-effective. Supportive housing is less expensive than shelter beds, jail beds, stays at the state hospital, time in emergency departments. We know we all gain when we work together to align resources to fill this gap. At Home Forward, we're eager to continue to partner with you to drive this effort forward.
Thank you.
Is it me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Hi, guys. My name's Justin. I just want to thank you for having me. And I want to start off with a quote. Please don't judge people for the choices they make when you don't know the options that they had to choose from. Okay. So I've experienced homeless at a really young age. My family, my dad, and my two brothers, we lived in the back of our station wagon in the ninth grade behind my high school. And to cope with that, my mom started giving me codeine threes, which is an opiate, because she saw it was really rough on me. And so anytime I had a problem or it got real tough, I would ask her for them, and she'd give them to me. And when she wouldn't, I'd steal them out of her purse. This led to me later on in my life to several years of incarcerations due to my addiction and 17 years homelessness. It's been a rough road. Been in and out of treatment centers. I could never really get off the streets. I cost the city a lot of money to support my habit. Sometimes my habit went up to $200 a day, and that's a lot of shoplifting and stealing. That was probably about 6 years ago. I was introduced to CCC, Central City Concern, and I got diagnosed with PTSD, depression, and bipolar schizoid disorder. I realized once I was given the meds for my mental health that I was self-medicating all those years. I was still on the streets. Then they put me on a wait list. While on the wait list, I got in trouble for my last time and was locked up for 9 months. Upon release that time, I went right back to the streets. But I got accepted after 2 months into the Bud Clark Commons. From there, I used every resource that was available. And I kept taking my meds, doing the next right thing. I got my GED. I got my driver's license after a 26-year suspension. Graduated a pre-apprenticeship program, which afforded me several really good certifications that make me a valuable asset to the trades. And now I'm an employee of Home Forward, and I'm doing well. I just want to add that without the foundation of having housing, I would be out there wreaking havoc, costing taxpayers lots of money, just trying to survive and self-medicate. Now I'm a taxpayer, and I would like nothing more than my tax dollars to go toward more housing opportunities like I have got. I just want to close by saying one more quote. This one's by Marion Wright Edelman, and she says, "Homeless shelters, human hunger, and suffering have become normalized in the richest nation on earth. It's time to reset our moral compass and redefine how we measure success." Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. I'd like to suspend the rules. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, and congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Good for you, and thank you for coming in and sharing that story with us, Commissioner.
Thank you for reminding us all why we do what we do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Jolin, I think you're up.
Good luck following
I'll do my best.
You should have gone first.
Yeah, probably. So I'm genuinely excited to be here. There's been so much important work happening this month around housing and homelessness, but today is really a unique day. We've done a lot of important work over the last 2.5 years since launching A Home for Everyone to create more opportunities for people experiencing homelessness, but I don't think there is an effort that's going to prove to be more important to the success of our work than what we're proposing to launch today. We are preventing, placing, retaining, and sheltering more people every year than at any time. Over 29,000 of our neighbors received assistance just through the programs funded with local, city, and county homeless program funding last year. We're piloting new interventions, and we're expanding the ones that work. But we're continuing to lose ground with one of the most vulnerable populations on our streets, those who are chronically homeless, people who have been homeless a long time and are struggling with one or more serious disabilities. The increase in chronic homelessness accounted for the vast majority of the overall increase in homelessness in the last point in time count. No other population group grew faster. Today, we're talking about an intervention, often the only intervention that works to end someone's chronic homelessness, supportive housing. Supportive housing was an innovation in 2004 when we launched the first 10-year plan to end homelessness. Today, there are literally volumes of research documenting not just that supportive housing works for those who benefit from it, but that it is the most cost-effective intervention we can make. We've studied it locally through an evaluation of the Bud Clark Commons and more recently a study by Enterprise of different types of supportive housing in the community. Across the board, what we learned from the research is what we would expect. Even the most chronically homeless individuals start to thrive when they get into supportive housing. They're able to retain that housing long term, and they use far fewer high-cost crisis resources. Supportive housing is a strategy that literally saves lives. When I moved back to Portland in 2000, I reconnected with a friend who I had gotten to know at the St. Francis Dining Hall in the early 90s. He'd spent most of the intervening period living on the streets. He was camping in the Central East Side when I met up with him again. He had aged a lot and was clearly not healthy. All of us who cared about him tried to help. He bounced around from garages to basements to a broken down truck, but none of it worked, and his health continued to deteriorate. And then one day, almost 15 years ago now, he finally got what he really needed, a supportive housing voucher, a shelter plus care voucher, a permanent deep rental subsidy, and a commitment of ongoing support services provided through Central City Concern and JOIN. The transition back inside was not easy. After so many years, he'll tell you the story of how long it took him to move his shopping cart, his safety net, out of his apartment. And his health challenges didn't disappear, but it did allow him to stop drinking and to stop smoking. He's now been off the streets and in his apartment in the Central East Side for more than a decade. And I talked to him this morning, and he said he's been sober for 13 years. While I was at JOIN, we tracked the success of every person we helped move into permanent housing. We were proud of the fact that overall, nearly 80% of the people who moved into housing were still in their units after 12 months. But our highest retention rates were with people who were in our permanent supportive housing programs. Even though those were some of the most vulnerable people we served, and we used a housing first strategy of moving people directly out of their camps and into permanent housing, retention rates for those households were always over 90%, and in some years, over 95%. The resolution that you have before you today represents both a recognition of the power of supportive housing to save and transform the lives of people living on our streets with serious disabilities, and a commitment to make this vital intervention available to thousands of additional people in our community. By adopting this resolution, you will direct our office to work with the Portland Housing Bureau, Home Forward, and the Multnomah County Health Department to launch a 9-month planning process to bring forward a plan to increase by at least 2,000 the number of available units of supportive housing in our community. The target will be 2,000, but recognizing that over time the need may well be greater, the plan will also lay out what it will take to further increase the number of units. In putting this plan together, we will be looking at the work that the Corporation for Supportive Housing has already done to identify the need and projected costs for developing and operating 2,000 additional units of supportive housing. We will be pulling together the relevant local stakeholders to look at our current housing and service investments to determine how many of the needed units we can create through better alignment of those resources. Through that process, we'll be able to determine how much additional resource it will take to meet our goal, and we will evaluate potential sources of additional funding. Importantly, our local effort will be running parallel to and capitalize on the supportive housing planning work at the regional and state levels. We are hoping that with the support of Metro, we will be able to launch a regional PSH planning process in the coming months that not only brings together our neighboring counties, but also our regional healthcare providers to determine both what the regional need for supportive housing is and how to meet that need. At the state level, there is also critical work happening to expand access to supportive housing for medically vulnerable individuals. Our local process will connect with those state efforts to look for opportunities to align our resources and to increase our supportive housing inventory. Within the planning process called for in this resolution, we will be able to start to answer some of the more specific questions many people have. How much of different types of supportive housing will we create? Will it be scattered site or facility-based? Which subpopulations will it serve? How will it be accessed and by what criteria? These are all important questions, but none are as important as the vision and commitment contained in this resolution to focus our collective efforts on dramatically expanding access to supportive housing in our community. So I want to thank first the Supportive Housing Work Group of A Home for Everyone that has been working on this issue for the past year, worked with CSH to put together the plan that is the foundation for the goal we've set here today. I want to thank Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Udaly, the mayor, and council for your leadership. I'm very much looking forward to doing this work.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of you.
May I just say
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. As you were talking, I was thinking of a committee that I was on in the 1990s, and I was serving as a registered nurse working at OHSU in inpatient psychiatry. And your mother, the great Gretchen Gafuri Commissioner, was on that committee. And I vividly remember when I said it costs $1,000 a day to have somebody an inpatient psychiatry at OHSU. And her mouth literally dropped. And she said, do you know what I could do with $1,000 a day? So in some ways, it's tragic that's nearly 20 years and here we are finally getting to it. On the other hand, here we are, we're finally getting to it. So I just wanted to thank all of you for being here today. I also have a couple of friendly amendments, if I might propose them. In the middle, there's fourth from the top and fourth from the bottom. It says, be it further resolved that the conveners shall engage and seek resource alignment opportunities with all potential funders and service provision sources. And then there's a list of a lot of what those are. I would propose that after the public mental health system and before hospitals, we would add the Unity Centre.
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Thank you. And then the second one is to have a further, be it further resolved to say that this is binding city policy.
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Those are substantive, so just for the record, if you don't mind, if I go ahead and call the roll just so that we have that on. Commissioner Udaly.
I just wanted to thank all of you for being here, and especially thank, is it Justin?
Yes, ma'am.
For sharing your story. I know how nerve-wracking it is to come to this table and say anything, let alone something so personal. And it's just vitally important that we hear these stories and that the public hears these stories, because I think that there is a pervasive belief that people who are chronically homeless, people who are experiencing mental illness or addiction, are lost causes, and you are proof that human beings aren't lost causes. And we need our whole community to really step up and be willing to support us in this challenge and show compassion and develop understanding. I want to thank you.
Thank you, Chloe.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there like me that if they just had that basic need, shelter met, they would thrive.
I've seen it in my own family. I have a family member with a similar story to you, different kind of childhood trauma, but turned to drugs for self-medicating, turned to crime to support the habit, ended up in prison, seemed trapped in that cycle. And it was housing and treatment through DePaul that allowed him to end that cycle, and he's now a peer support counselor for Central City. So
yeah.
I know it can happen, and we need to hear more of these stories.
For sure, yeah. I'm happy I could be a help.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to me.
Appreciate your being here. We're going to combine Commissioner Fritz's two amendments into one called Fritz 1. Please call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, as Checkafory and the mayor and everybody knows, we're putting a lot of money into the Unity Centre in the hope that it is going to help solve the problem of people being outside and getting into our police justice system, which is obviously not helpful. So it's really important that the main thing I think that's lacking in the Unity Centre at this point is those supportive beds to move people in them once they've gotten medications and gotten stable. So thank you for accepting this amendment. Aye.
Fish.
And I appreciate what Commissioner Fritz has just highlighted, because one of the quandaries we have is that when someone's released from an emergency room, from a jail bed, from the Unity Center, from Bud Clark Commons, when the service center closes, they're right back on the street. And that's not our goal. Our goal is to move them to a better place. So thank you for the amendments. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's adopted. Thank you. I will now open it up to public testimony, 3 minutes each. If you could please state your name for the record. We do not need to know your address.
We have five people signed up.
Very good.
The first three are Mary Sipe, Joe Walsh, and Mimi Gurman. I think Mimi left. Let's go with Andy Miller.
I'll go ahead and get started to save some time.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you. My name's Mary Sipe, and Justin said something that one of his quotes about don't judge people for the choices they make when you don't know the options that they have to choose from. And that really rings true with me. And I want to just kind of touch on something that I don't hear much conversation about, and that is I kind of see the premise that if we build it, they will come. And unfortunately, many will come, but some will not. And what I would like to ask is, are we creating a parallel plan to address those people that don't have the ability to make the choices or that make choices that continue to be barriers to their housing? I think a good example of this, if you watched the Tent City USA report on KGW last week, was very interesting to me. They followed a woman named Willow who was disabled, and they talked about how she got $700 in SSI benefits. And right off the bat, you're thinking, wow, you know, nobody can afford an apartment under $700 a month. However, under Section 42, with those kinds of benefits, she could afford a $400 a month apartment in the building where I live, and she would be getting food stamps. There's probably 100 people that are in the building where I live that are in that situation. So what immediately clicks in my mind is why, what's happening to prevent this individual from getting into housing? Is it her pit bull? Who knows? Is it something else that's going on? And what I would like to ask is, there are going to be these people that fall through the cracks, that we need to have a plan for how do we figure out a way to reach out to them and bring them in off of the street. You know, I've shared with you the story of my family member who I tried to help, who, because of his mental illness, saw me as the enemy and as wanting to institutionalize him. And so along with all of this, with providing the supportive housing, I'd just like to be sure that we don't forget that we need to have some contingency plan over here for those individuals that can't make the right choices, or that certain, I mean, just because you decide to have a dog, should that be the reason you can't get into housing? Section 42 buildings in my neighborhood all accept pets, but they usually have certain breed restrictions. And so there's just certain things like that that I think if we could dig a little deeper, get out there and ask people, you know, what is it that's standing in your way? You know, no matter how many beds we have or how many units we have, there are going to be those individuals. So thank you for listening.
Thanks, Mary. Mm-hmm. I'm always appreciative of your detailed understanding of these issues, and that's very helpful testimony.
I appreciate your appreciation. Yeah.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. Go ahead and we'll get Mr. Walsh. Mr. Walsh, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. One of the phenomenal things that's happened this morning is I'm going to agree with a lot of people here that have fought for the last 10 years. Commissioner Fish, I agree with you. I agree with Chairperson Kafoury. I agree with Mark, and don't fall off the chair. Where I disagree with all of you, is you know that there are not 2,000 people on our streets. It's more like 4, 5, depending on who you're talking to. Could be as high as 6. So why 2? How do we decide on 2,000 in 10 years? And why are we bragging about that? If you said to me, I'm going to get off 2,000 people in 6 months, I'm going to take some of those millions of dollars, and I'm getting these people off the street, I'd be right with you. Let's go. But you're not saying that. You're saying 2,000. And Mark, if he was honest, which I think he is, would tell you there are 16,000 hanging by their fingertips in garages, on beds, friends' houses, in hallways. Look, folks, I'm just going to say this for the 50th time going back 10 years. It's the same sermon I gave 10 years ago. You're going to fail. I said it 5 years ago. You're going to fail. I said it 2 years ago. You're going to fail. And I'm saying it today. You're going to take that $258 million and screw it up. Because it's associated with this. You use affordable housing, and then you use the people on the street to make affordable housing more acceptable, and they are not connected. If you're on the street with no money and you're a drug addict, you have nothing to do with affordable housing. Nothing. You need someone to help. Someone to reach down and say, here, here's a peanut butter sandwich. You, Mayor, put those people in jail. How's that? That's what I argue with you. How much failure can you all take? How much until you say, stop? Who the hell's succeeding? Salt Lake City is. New York is. California's learning. But you're not interested in that. So what is the interest? You guys are corrupt.
Thank you for
That's
that testimony.
You
Very
you're
good.
You're corrupt.
Thank you. We've heard you out.
You are
we get
corrupt.
The we get the
and
point.
Don't you ever, it,
excuse
ever call
me. Your time is up.
Ever.
I don't call you Joe.
Yes,
I call you Mr.
You
Walsh.
Did it today.
Isn't your name
don't
Joe?
You ever do it.
Okay, fine. Goodbye. Thank you.
No, goodbye nowhere.
Excuse me.
That's no
excuse
mayor.
Me, sir.
You
your time
fight.
Is up.
You want to fight?
Are you serious?
You
Mr.
Are
Walsh.
Elegant.
Mr. Walsh, why do you want to get I don't want to get you kicked out of here.
I'll
let's just move
you
on.
Here right now.
Mr. Walsh, let's move on so that you can stay. I don't want
why
to have
to resign.
Mr. Walsh.
We can move on then.
Mr. Walsh, please just take
you
your seat.
Republican.
Mr. Walsh, now he cuts to the quick. Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Good morning.
Andy.
Breath.
Good morning.
My name is Andy Miller. I'm the Executive Director of Human Solutions. We are your partners in East Portland and East County on the issues of homelessness and housing, and I'm here today to urge your support for this resolution and to say thank you. Thank you for prioritizing permanent supportive housing today with this resolution and in the bond framework that you adopted a week ago. It's a critical component to any city's strategy in addressing homelessness, especially the issue of chronic homelessness, and is a proven national best practice. So I'm pleased to see us moving forward. As you all know, and as we as providers know, permanent supportive housing is one of the most difficult types of housing to create. It involves the braiding and bringing together of funding sources that often don't play well together in the sandbox. So it requires a level of intentionality and a level of work upstream with the funders themselves to coordinate those funding streams in a way that achieves the results that this resolution says this community wants to achieve, the creation of permanent supportive housing units. So I applaud you for understanding that. One specific piece I want to underline that often gets left out of our public dialogue around homelessness are the issues of families experiencing homelessness, and in particular the need of families with children for permanent supportive housing. Our public dialogue, especially recently around homelessness, has focused heavily on what the community sees in the streets, and that's a reasonable place to focus because that's what we see every day. At Human Solutions, we operate a no-turn-away shelter for families experiencing homelessness. And because of that, and because of the way that the homeless family system works, right now our community isn't typically not seeing kids and their parents waking up in tents and trailers and heading to school in the morning because they all have a place to sleep at night, and that's in the shelter. But to give you an idea of what's happened in that system, somewhat quietly and invisibly to the community, we completed the construction of the Family Center in February 2016, and it's a shelter that has sleeping capacity for 130 kids and their parents on any given night. Almost immediately after opening, our numbers were up at 160. Flash forward 18 months, last night we had 424 kids and their parents sheltered here in Multnomah County. We can't keep infinitely expanding that system. And it's very clear to us as a provider that a subset of the family population is in deep need of supportive housing. They all need affordable housing, but the specific type of housing we're prioritizing here, often it's not the family population that folks are thinking of. So I want to encourage us as we move forward to stay focused and do the work to find out how big the need is among the family population, or we're not going to solve that problem. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Carla?
Thanks, Mary.
Two more.
And Lightning is the last person who signed up.
Very good. Come on up.
While Lightning's coming forward, colleagues, Heather Lyons, who's here, submitted her testimony. It's in the record, so I'm going to hand this out. So we have her testimony, and it's been submitted for the record.
Excellent. And,
sorry, Gary Cobb did sign up, but I thought he wasn't speaking. So, Gary Cobb.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. One of the things I want to focus on again is we can have great aspirational dreams and we can talk some great talk, and, you know, politicians are good at that. But at the end of the day, we need funding. Commissioner Salzman, affordable housing bond. That's called needing funding, understanding that up front, and then beginning to create the support of permanent housing. Now, with that in mind, we can calculate out to 2,000 from the bond that isn't close to that, but we're going to do some real good numbers there when it's all said and done. Again, I'm looking at turnkey development opportunities there and staying within the legal framework of doing that. But keeping that in mind, again, President Hughes, I sat alongside of you on that convention center hotel. I lobbied. I'm not a lobbyist, for the record, on your behalf to push that through. Congratulations. That's your legacy. The affordable housing bond is Commissioner Salzman's legacy. Now, the challenge to you at Metro, $125 million bond. That's your challenge. That's a match to the bond over here. The challenge at Multnomah County, $125 million bond. That's your challenge. Put the money on the table. Show me the money for these units. Show me the money. Aspirational dreams are only dreams. You're going to wake up, and those units might not be there. Show me the money. Now, some more money. Tektronix, the tech industry coming into this city, I'm appalled at your behavior. I'm shame on you. I want you to step up and start showing where the real money is, but start funding these type of units, workforce housing. Start sponsoring people laying on a sidewalk. Just one company coming into town, walk out on a sidewalk and say, I'm going to sponsor you for the year. I'm going to provide you housing for the full year with supportive housing. I'm going to fund that from my company. That's what we need. Every company coming into town, take one person off the sidewalk, fund them, sponsor them, put them into housing, give them services, provide them jobs. Just do it. To my good friend Phil Knight, just do it. That's what we need, funding. We need more funding. We need sponsorship. Stand up, get the job done, tech industry. I'm watching you. Super unicorns in the future? I don't think so. Unless you take care of the most vulnerable people in this city, you'll never receive that status. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies.
Thank you, sir.
And I know that's not politically correct to say anymore because of Chloe Udaly, but who gives a shit?
All right, let's remember we have an FCC license, family TV. Good morning.
I've also never spoken out. I've also never spoken out against the word lady.
Good morning. Sunshine. Good morning.
It's Commissioner Lady.
Please,
to
please,
you, thanks.
Please, please, please. Everybody, let's take a deep breath. Let's keep going here. This is an important issue. Good morning.
Embarrassment to the commissioner. Good morning. Mayor Wheeler, City Commissioners. My name is Gary Cobb. I'm the Community Outreach Coordinator at Central City Concern. I want to say that Central City Concern certainly welcomes this resolution that's being brought forward. Our name is mentioned a couple of times here. And I think I'm just going to, a lot of things were mentioned that kind of highlights the importance of supportive housing. And for me on a professional level, on a personal level, I can give two counts. Supportive housing worked for me about 17 years ago. That springboarded me into long-term employment, long-term recovery, and into home ownership. I see that happen daily with folks. Also, like Justin, and Justin's still here, I think his story highlights what can be done daily. We're outreach workers that I get to work with. We can locate someone because they're stably housed, and we can get them plugged into the services on a regular basis. And I don't want to have us look at 2,000 units as it's only serving 2,000 people. We know that over the history that these units can be multiplied. People can get in and out of them. It all depends on an individual basis what those folks may need. And so I look at it in a way that I want to leave with the words that I heard somebody say. I shared this with Chair Kafori last night, that these are small steps that create big changes, not only in the individuals that will use this housing, but what you'll get back in the investment. You know, you'll get the taxpayers back into the system. You'll get the good neighbors that I know that I am and many of my colleagues are that use supportive housing to be where they're at today. So we encourage a unanimous yes vote on this and look forward to partnering with you all. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for your testimony. Okay. Thanks You're for welcome. Your longstanding leadership, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Mayor.
You bet. Very good. Is there any other testimony, Carla?
That's all signed up. We did have a request.
Very good. Any further questions or comments, colleagues? Please call the roll.
I was a little late, just a little bit. I don't know.
Can you do it in 30 seconds or less? Come on up, because we're way behind.
I can do it from here, though.
No, please introduce yourself. The mic, 30 seconds.
Surely.
Thanks.
Mike Withy. So I would just like to add to this that other countries, when they have natural disasters, they'll send in organizations as like a MASH unit, temporary MASH units, you could say. So people do become homeless in mass amounts all the time. So I think what we have here, along with this and many other things, we may want to start consider emergency relief efforts. And what that includes is the same thing we do after Katrina or anything else, except with a twist. We'll have homeless people there with the people that are helping. We'll have all the services there. Not big, huge relief efforts like a natural disaster, but this should be treated like a disaster. So I just wanted to slip that into your mind as one of the tools in the box that we have.
Great. Good idea. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Please call the roll.
You Daly?
So I just want to address a couple comments that were made during testimony. I don't shy away from debate or critique on our policy solutions, and I look forward to most public testimony, but it's extremely counterproductive for community members to come here and spread misinformation and misunderstanding in the public. I have confidence that most of you who are in this chambers today understand that some of the things that were said were just a misrepresentation of reality, but I'm concerned for people listening and watching in the community that they may think that we think creating 2,000 units is going to solve our housing crisis, and it's obviously not. So, just to be clear, this is one essential piece of a multifaceted solution to alleviating and eventually solving our housing crisis, and it is targeted to a specific population of individuals experiencing mental illness, drug addiction, significant disability, or some combination thereof. Not all 2,000 to 4,000 people who are homeless or living in temporary shelter require permanent supportive housing. Many of them have simply been displaced from economically displaced from their housing. So we are not building permanently supportive housing for those people. We're doing other things like increasing tenant protections, our inclusionary zoning plan, building housing through our housing bond, our residential infill program, pausing enforcement on tiny homes and RVs, and working with our state and federal delegations on finding more funding and more solutions for what is a national housing crisis. Now for my closing statements. I'm sincerely grateful to serve alongside colleagues who are committed to improving the lives of the most vulnerable, some of the most vulnerable people in our city. What we're doing today is setting the sails to greater stability and greater quality of life
for thousands of people, and I'm very eager and anxious to see that happen. So I want to thank my staff, Jamie and Marshall, for collaborating on this effort, as well as the staff from Commissioner Fish's office and Mayor Wheeler's office. I'm grateful for the partnership with Multnomah County, especially Chair Kafori and her office, and I wish them luck on their own resolution tomorrow. Hopefully, there'll be a different tone in the room.
Who knows?
I also want to give a special warm thank you to Mark Jolin, who I've really enjoyed working with this year, and all of the staff at A Home for Everyone and the Joint Office of Homeless Services for being the stewards of these bold visions and for being so capable and ready for whatever challenges we throw their way. Because of them and the other conveners listed in the resolution, I have great hope that not only will we accomplish these goals, but we will have a clear path to doing even more. I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Fritz.
Well, first, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for being the Council's champion on this resolution, and to your Chief of Staff, who identified a lot of good things to do next. When I arrived here in Portland in 1986, I went to work at OHSU on their two units. They, at that time, had a crisis unit for people coming in needing stabilization, and then a step-down unit where people could stay for as long as it took to get better. And that meant that we as nurses did therapy. There was actually a chance to see whether the medications they were given were working or not. And people did stay until they got better. And there was Dammish State Hospital was available for people who were not getting better and needed long-term care. Over the course of the 90s, Dammish was closed. OHSU decided it was going to share the concern of unfunded care. The insurance companies went forced to do Tipper Gore's mental health parity, decided that they would have new codes as to what they could get paid, what they would pay for and what they would not, so that people who said they were feeling suicidal would get admitted. People who had the knowledge and self-awareness to know I'm addicted to drugs or alcohol did not get admitted. And so those folks were on the street. We started discharging more and more people who didn't have anywhere to go and who had were just given a bus ticket. And when I vividly remember the day that we discharged a man with no shoes and the bus ticket, because that was all we had available. And then, of course, we as the staff thought, well, we should have a clothes closet. We should bring in our old, you know, the usable shoes and things so that people could have something to wear home or to, and hopefully to wear home. But even then, we knew that there wasn't anywhere for them to go to. So when I ran for Port City Council in 2006 and 2008, people would ask me, why aren't you running for the county? You know, that the county does healthcare and human services, and that's what you've been working on. But I had also, as a hobby, kind of got passionate about land use planning. And so for a long time, I had been on the Planning Commission, and I felt that there was nobody like me on the Portland City Council who could represent a lot of different interests on that council. And that's why I ran for the city job, that and public campaign financing, which I've really wanted to make work and have somebody who could be pointed at as somebody who would not have gotten elected without it. Over the time that I've been, the 9 years I've been on the council, we've done more and more things that where it's absolutely clear that my previous work experience and life experience ties so much into everything we do at the city. Most prominent, of course, is the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement, where we are directed by the U.S. Department of Justice to stop giving disparate treatment to people experiencing mental health crises. Commissioner Fish has long time led this push for permanent supportive housing, which is even more obvious now, as I mentioned, that the Unity Centre brought together several of the city hospitals into an emergency room where it's hoped that people wouldn't need admitting, that they could get some counselling there, they could get their medicines refilled, and that they would have somewhere to go after they were feeling stable. And that's a piece that is just not there yet, and that's why it's really crucial. Of course, if we could all wave a magic wand and immediately have 2,000 units of housing with services, we would want to do that. It's much more responsible to say that it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of money, and we're going to do it correctly. So I particularly appreciate Chair Kafori and, of course, the Joint Office and Home Forward for coordinating with the city for the first time since I been here. I have to also add that I'm particularly proud of having helped elect Dr. Sharon Myron to the County Board of Commissioners, because she is giving that in-depth and ongoing what's going on in the emergency room feedback as to what's working and what's not working. So I'm really proud to be able to vote yes on this resolution. I'm really glad that we are finally bringing a coordinated system, including comprehensive mental health and addiction services. Aye.
Fish?
I'll be brief. First, I want to thank Mr. Martinez for joining us today and reminding us that everybody at some point in their life has a setback. And the question is, what kind of hand do we extend to lift someone up? 2 months ago, I could buy life insurance. I can't today. 2 months ago, my life was moving along in one direction, and now I have what's called a pre-existing condition, subject to the whims of how the Congress decides to do health care. We hit bumps along the road. The question is, as a community, how do we embrace people at a time of need, and how do we help them? And this is just one of many tools, and this is a tool that's worked for 30 years. And we're in a sense, putting old wine in a new bottle. But we're going back and saying we're going to make this commitment, and I'm very proud of this day. I believe that there's a couple relationships in local government that are really important, but I don't think there's one that's more important than the relationship between a county chair and a mayor. I've served with four mayors and several county chairs. They are both independent actors. They both have separate responsibilities. But when a county chair and a mayor link arms and focus on a problem, really amazing things can happen. And I have such high hopes for this partnership between Deborah Cafori and Ted Wheeler. And I'm going to do everything I can to help support that relationship. So, Deborah, thank you for all the work that you've done, and thank you for joining us today. And I hope those kind words give me some kind of pass tomorrow when I'm before you. Ian and Mark and Justin, thank you for joining us in your testimony. Michael Bonacore is not here, but let's give him a shout-out, because Home Forward is constantly stepping up with Section 8 vouchers to help us meet the goal. To Kurt and Javier and Shannon and all of our friends at the Housing Bureau, thank you for your role. Heather Lyons is here, Corporation for Supportive Housing. I remember the day sometime in 1990 when I met Roseanne Haggerty, and she told me about supportive housing. And it was still a glimmer. It was an idea. It hadn't become embraced widely. And the Corporation for Supportive Housing, in my opinion, has done more to spread that gospel and to create the technical infrastructure to allow communities to move on this. So, Heather, thank you, and thanks to you and Central City Concern for hosting the Supportive Housing Summit, which I thought was really important to hear from our friends in Seattle and Los Angeles, and then to share ideas. Thanks to Dennis Thoreau, who is was one of my favorite writers when he was a member of when he had another career. And Dennis had a big hand in the op-ed, and thank you for helping us tell our story. To Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Daley and all my colleagues, it's an honor to serve with you during these challenging times, and we've done some good work this year. To my staff, Jamie Dunphy, Amira Streeter, and Sonia Schmansky, thank you very much for your great work and all the effort you put into this. And I want to close by just saying that acknowledging three women. Roseanne Haggerty, who in 1990 broke every rule in New York and said, we're going to do something different. And thankfully, a mayor accepted that challenge. And that mayor was David Dinkins, followed by Giuliani, which shows that it was a good idea. It was such a good idea, it became nonpartisan. To Gretchen, who when I came to Portland gave me the opportunity to serve on the what was then called Housing Authority of Portland, and regularly challenged me to do more. And I'm so grateful, as is Amanda, for the role that she played in my life. And then to Susan Emmons, who regularly comes to this body and challenges us to do more for people that have so little. And those three voices really help shape my view of this subject. And as long as I have the honor of serving on this body, I will be pushing to make sure we provide a roof over the head of the most vulnerable people in our community. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your tireless devotion to more permanent supportive housing. It certainly is an idea that's proven over the last 20, 30 years, and government does well when we invest in proven ideas that work. And this seems certainly is one of those ideas that works. It's just a matter of getting the cooperation going between the county,